00058 Real 3.
It was a real debacle because, as I said, we had no defense whatsoever of the field. Looking back on it, there seems to be no excuse. We'd had plenty of time. We'd been there for at least a week. Our forces were commanded by a lieutenant colonel, and I don't remember his name, but in any event, he hadn't done a damn thing to defend himself. And when these nine fighters came in, they had a field day. We had 10 or 11 PBY flying boats out in the harbor, and these were being used to evacuate people as fast as they came in from Java. They were in the process of being loaded at the time, and small boats were taking women and children, Dutch people who had been evacuated, out to these PBYs. And of course the Japanese fighters selected them as the first target. All of the aircraft were burned in the water, and the small boats were strafed, and many women and children were killed. When the Japanese finished with this portion, then they attacked the bombers. Nobody had thought to start an engine on any one bomber. If we had started the engines on all of our, one engine each on our bombers, that would have provided power to man the turrets. And we had at that time 10 or 12 B-17s sitting on the runway, and this amount of firepower, we could have easily defended ourselves against the Japanese, but we were completely disorganized and unprepared, and all of our aircraft were destroyed. Ultimately, we were evacuated to Perth, and at Perth we got on a train and went down to Melbourne, Australia, which was the headquarters established for the reorganization of the American forces. In Perth, the Australian, I think it was the 7th Division, the Rats of Tobruk, had been brought home, and their ship had arrived in Perth the same time we did. It was almost like a reunion that night. There was no place for us to sleep. Every hotel in Perth had been taken over. I slept on the floor in the main lobby of one of the hotels with a mixed group of Americans and Australians. But we didn't seem to mind that because, first of all, there was no shortage of beer in the pubs. They were kept open a little bit later than usual, beyond their normal closing hour. And we had, in effect, a reunion with the Aussies as though we were long-lost friends. While we were in Java, we were being paid with Dutch money. And when we evacuated, we had taken it for granted that that money would be worthless. I had gone into a Javanese silver shop and purchased some very lovely silver dishes and fruit dishes, that sort of thing, as had almost all of the rest of our crews. These things, of course, were in the airplanes at Broome, and when we went back out after the raid was ended, we couldn't tell the difference between the molten silver and the molten aluminum because everything had burned and everything had melted. One of the things that all of us came out of the war with, I think, was a sort of a fatalistic attitude. And the type of episode that would engender this attitude in a man, I can give two illustrations. One was when we were under head-on attack from a number of fighters, and in operating the Norden bombsight, the bombardier would look through the small telescope trying to find his target, and if he couldn't see it yet, then he would sit back and look up over the top of the bombsight and find the target visually and then go back into the Norden and keep repeating this until we finally could identify the target through the Norden bombsight. On one such occasion, I had sat back to look over the top when a 20-millimeter cannon shell came through the nose of the airplane, and my bombsight completely disintegrated. The Japanese 20-millimeters had a very slight delayed fuse so that they would penetrate the skin of the aircraft before they exploded. And I think that shell had probably actually exploded against my bombsight itself. But I was completely untouched, not even a scratch from the fragmentation. On another occasion, we were on our way home from a mission, and I looked to my left, and there was a hole in the side of the airplane And I looked to my right, and there was a hole where the shell had gone out. A 20 millimeter had come through the airplane. I had been leaning down over the bomb site so that this shell, which fortunately was a dud, had passed behind my back. It had come in on the left and gone out on the right, and none of us even knew it. Of course, if it had not been a dud, you'd be getting this story from somebody else. But these are two episodes, I think, that gave us the sort of notion that there was a God in heaven and that he was looking over us and that we really didn't have much to worry about because nothing was going to happen until it was supposed to happen. I guess maybe that's a good attitude for a soldier because with any different kind of an attitude, the job would be more difficult. Well, I hope all of this helps, and I repeat, please do let me know if you have any question or any portion that you want elaborated on. In listening to this, it's not a very good tape because apparently as the batteries ran down, I failed to adjust the recording level, but all of it is legible, and I'm sure you won't have any trouble with it.